And good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, May 20th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Ndimyake Mwakalielie.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Leading Zimbabwean refugee groups in South Africa dismiss recent press reports that Zimbabweans living in that country will not be allowed to renew their permits when they expire in November.
Our approach is to wait for the Home Affairs Minister to make the pronouncement and to elaborate on the process the Zimbabweans are going to take and how the process will unfold if they are to get the permit from Zimbabwe. And we were also waiting for the elections to pass.
ZANU-PF's hardline stance against the West appears to be waning in favor of a more conciliatory call for re-engagement and compromise on black empowerment. Does this mean the ruling party is climbing down?
ZANU-PF certainly believes that with Morgan Tsvangirai losing his position, there's a vacuum in terms of who the international community can relate to, and that they hope they can recapture the position they had before the advent of the MDC.
And National Blood Transfusion Service representatives appear before the Parliamentary Health Committee to address the House's concern over the high cost of blood in the country's hospitals.
Leading Zimbabwean refugee groups in South Africa have dismissed recent press reports that Zimbabweans living in that country will not be allowed to renew their permits when they expire in November. Although no official comment could be obtained from the South African government, the MDCT in South Africa and the Zim Migrants International, two of the organizations that hold regular meetings with South African officials on the permit issues, both dismissed the reports. The South African government granted Zimbabweans living in that country a special dispensation some 4 years ago, allowing them to regularize their stay.
Most of the permits that were obtained by more than 250,000 Zimbabweans are set to expire in November. Recent media reports alleged Zimbabweans would not be allowed to renew the permits unless they go back home and submit fresh applications. However, Communications Director Daniel Muzenda of the Zim Migrants International tells reporter Chris Gande that at their last meeting with South African officials, it was agreed that a new directive would come from the new cabinet that is yet to be sworn in following recent elections in that country.
As of now, we do not have an official communication from the South African government on the issue of permits. As from March, they haven't communicated to us any modalities, and as an organization, we have also partnered with some other organizations like the South African Forum for International Solidarity and then Solidarity Peace Trust and the African Diaspora Association to engage the government. We are also looking at other issues, not only the issue of permits, the delay in documentation processing leading to people losing their jobs here in South Africa. There is also rampant corruption in the Home Affairs Ministry and a lot of harassment of Zimbabweans, especially by the South African police.
But why is it that the media is awash with the news of the South African government having stopped issuing permits?
When I tried to find out from the Ministry of Home Affairs itself, there is nothing like that. As of now, the official position of the South African government, we are waiting for the modalities by the new minister who is going to be installed maybe in the next 2 weeks. So we are urging all our members not to panic and overreact and wait for the minister to give us the modalities, and then we will pick it up from there, Chris.
That was Communications Director Daniel Muzenda of Zim Migrants International on the line with Studio 7's Chris Gande from Johannesburg.
Tensions are rising in Chisumbanje, where some small-scale farmers in Magokoa and Jerawachera villages are alleging that the controversial green fuel company is mowing down their crops, which are ready for harvest, as their dispute over land continues. Villagers were surprised today to see green fuel tractors moving in to destroy crops they planted on the disputed land. Communication seems to have broken down between the villagers and the company following the end of the unity government. Former Deputy Prime Minister Arthur Mutambara led a cabinet task force seeking to resolve the dispute, but a vacuum has existed since.
Wilson Chibeza, one of the affected farmers, says he woke up 2 days ago to find his maize crop, which was ready for harvesting, ploughed down without any explanation or prior warning. Efforts to get a comment from Green Fuel were unsuccessful, but one of the company's representatives, Andrew King, asked Studio 7 to send written questions. He said the allegations leveled by the villagers against his company are untrue. Chibeza speaks with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanganyawuye about the villagers' plight.
What is happening is that the investor Magnum is plowing down our crops, maize crops, cotton and the like, without consulting us.
Did you have some of your crops plowed down yourself personally, and how big was the area that was plowed down?
I have got my maize crop which ought to be harvested, which was plowed down. The area, I think, it's a strip which is about 40 to 60 meters wide going, because they are saying they want to prepare a road to carry their cane from Siyankwakwa to their maize.
Was there any notification given to you as farmers that company was going to come and raise down your crops?
There was no communication. If it was there, we could make a plan of clearing that area to save that crop from being plowed down.
Are there any meetings that are actually convened between the villagers and officials of the company that's raising your maize down?
There are no such meetings. We used to have epic meetings, but nowadays, because there is no longer that area which we used to be there, so it's hard now for villagers and the community people to be there. There's no longer any forum where they can air their grief now.
What role would you like to see government take in this dispute?
We would like the government to be in front, since it is now, I think they say it's not a national project, isn't it? So we expect that the government must be the one to lead these guys, the investor, to take a leading role. That's why things are not done for now, because these guys are only taking profit.
Chisumbanje resident and farmer Wilson Chibeza speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanganyawuye from Chisumbanje.
Teachers have expressed mixed feelings on the government's new policy to compel those who failed mathematics, science, and English subjects to rewrite the examinations in a move meant to improve the quality of education in the country. The government says it is working with donors to fund the program and has already sent circulars to school authorities to compile the list of targeted teachers. Neva Nyahunji, Provisional Coordinator of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe in Matabeleland North, told Studio 7 that the circular further stipulates that the national syllabus will be changed in a few months and teachers who fail to comply with the new requirements will be replaced.
Educationist Felix Magalela Mafa tells reporter Standekile Mhlanga the move is a good start, but it should be complemented with high working conditions and salaries for teachers and ensuring that educators are competent with local language of communities where they teach to effectively improve the pass rate in the country.
As an experienced educationist, I discovered that most of the children were literally destroyed at the primary level for the reason that most of the teachers not passed all level maths, so I commend the ministry to have done that. I think it's been overdue. However, they should have even gone further, that anybody who teaches in one region should also know the mother language. Gradually, they should also introduce specialization in primary schools. Teachers are overloaded by 13 subjects in primary school. It hinders their professionalism. In a nutshell, I think teachers should be all-rounders. These two critical subjects, science and mathematics, are critical for development for any country, for planning, for innovation and so forth.
What about the secondary school teachers who say they specialize in certain subjects? How will this help?
It will curtail the shortages of teachers. We have to do away with the perception that maths and the science are hard not to crack.
Previously, what were the basic qualifications and why were all these other subjects not required?
Before I answer you that question, in developed countries for first graders, they are taught by those who have masters in education. Foundation is the best in any development. The basic qualification was that you should have at least 5 O-level, maths, English, and science. In driving, the drivers are retested after some period because they are trying to curtail road carnage. In Zimbabwe, our pass rate has been less than 23% O-level. So I think the scholars and the scientists have discovered one of the failures is that our teachers are not well-groomed.
That was educationist Felix Magalela Mafa on the line from Bulawayo.
Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Chief Executive Officer Manuel Nyawo says his union is disturbed by this development, adding the government did not consult them when it took the decision.
We are very much surprised, we are perturbed, we are pained by this development from the Ministry of Education. Because what we fail to understand is which group of teachers are they really referring to? Because of the teachers who trained way back in the early 70s, who were doing gallons, coats and pints in their mathematics, are they the group of people that they're actually saying they are supposed to go back to the desk and write O-level mathematics and science at O-level? After all, we are saying what has Pythagoras' theorem and the quadratic equation has to do with a teacher who is teaching primary school children from grade 1 to grade 7.
Were you consulted as teachers' unions?
I'm not sure whether our colleagues or our counterparts in ZIMUT and PZ were consulted. But as for ourselves, we were never consulted. In fact, what pains us most is that since the Honorable Minister came into office, he has never on one day endeavored, although we have seen several settlers to date, to actually summon us for some discussions around the policy-making issues. This is why we are querying this latest development where the circular to say those teachers who do not have all of mathematics and science must go back to desk. We were never consulted.
Are you going to challenge this in any way?
Teachers in general, myself excluded for now, have already challenged this development. And we are saying we will not rest until we make sure that the minister readdresses this problem, this challenge.
That was Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Chief Executive Officer Manuel Nyawo in Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri. The Parliamentary Health Committee today expressed concern at the high cost of blood in the country's hospitals. At $200 per unit, parliamentarians said this was beyond the reach of many people in the country. But National Blood Transfusion Service officers told the committee they could not explain the high cost of blood in hospitals, saying they charge at least $135 per unit. The National Blood Transfusion Service operates as a non-profit. Officials told the Health Committee the service works on a cost recovery model with operational charges covering the cost to duplicate tests on HIV, hepatitis B and C, and syphilis.
Officials added the cost of blood units paid in hospitals may reflect the institution's administrative costs. Last year, public and private health institutions owed more than $1 million to the National Blood Transfusion Service, forcing patients to unusually pay directly to the organization when in need. But patients still complain the cost of blood remains too high. Studio 7 reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Mfundo Ngwenya, spokesperson for the National Blood Transfusion Services, who explains overall that the NBTS is managing to supply blood even as financial constraints continue.
The overall picture is that blood is being accessed by almost everybody. Yes, of course, so we may have some challenges, but generally all I can say is it's accessible. Quite a good number of pool of donors.
Looking at the cost of blood, how does this work as an organization?
We use what is called the cost recovery model, mate. Yeah? Whereupon, as a not-for-profit making organization, we are relying really on making sure that our donors, our patients who are the recipients of this blood, do at least give us something in return so that at least we are able to advently make sure that that link that they remit, we are able to process other units of blood, which are supposed to be due to other patients as well.
How do the hospitals come up with their price of blood? Are you involved in that design?
No, we are not involved. Of course, yes, in the foreseeable future, we have managed to set up what we call hospital transfusion committees, you see, which are probably maybe are going to assist also to give maybe an insight as to whatever levies are due to these people.
And as you pointed out, that majority of those who are donating blood are younger. What's your advice to those who might be fearful of giving blood?
Yeah, of course, there is no human being who is working on two who doesn't have blood. First things first, we all need that blood. We are all potentially in need of blood because accidents never telephone us to tell us where to meet them, and then we rush there. They happen against our cause and our wish. So as such, I would implore on everybody out there to make sure that they are able to give this blood if they are healthy and strong and fit and within the age range of 16 and above. Probably cutoff point is about 65 years. They should be up and running to make sure that they give blood so that at least they think for themselves and their families so that in time of need they can be given this blood.
That was Mfundo Ngwenya, spokesman for the National Blood Transfusion Services in Harare. Parliament today passed the Trafficking of Persons Bill without amendments. It provides for the domestication of the United Nations Protocol to prevent, suppress and punish human trafficking in people, especially children and women. The bill also seeks to appoint a committee on trafficking in persons with a mandate to formulate and implement a national plan of action against trafficking in persons. There is also a provision to enable the framework for the establishment and operation of centers for victims of trafficking.
The bill creates the crime of trafficking in persons and specifies certain instances in which the offense is to be considered as committed in aggravating circumstances. Penalties for the crime will vary in gravity depending on whether the accused person is the actual trafficker himself or herself, or simply an associate or assistant to the trafficker, reads the preamble to the bill. In the first case, a mandatory sentence of 10 years imprisonment without an option of a fine is legislated for offenders. In the other case, the courts are given a broader discretion to impose fines, imprisonment, or both.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
is ZANU-PF climbing down on its hardline stance on indigenization and the West?
How about first a look at regional and international news?
Voters are casting ballots for president in Malawi, where incumbent leader Joyce Banda is facing stiff challenges in the first democratic test of her rule. President Banda rose to power 2 years ago when her predecessor, Bingu wa Mutharika, suddenly died in office. At the time, she was serving as vice president. She's facing 11 challengers in her bid to win a new term. Her main challengers include Mr. Mutharika's brother, Peter, former cleric Lazarus Chakwera, and Atupele Muluzi, who is the son of former Malawian president Bakili Muluzi. All three of their parties have won the presidency before. The Election Commission chairperson, Justice Maxon Bendera, told VOA that the voting would be credible and transparent despite some concerns about a new voters list. Some opposition and civil society groups said there were inaccuracies on the new voters list that could undermine the credibility of the vote.
A South African judge ordered runner Oscar Pistorius to undergo psychiatric and psychological tests beginning Monday to examine whether his mental state made him criminally responsible for shooting his girlfriend. Judge Tokozile Masipa today said that the doctors will look into whether a mental illness or detected at the time of the shooting affected his ability to recognize it was wrong. Pistorius will go to the Workspost Psychiatric Hospital in Pretoria every weekday for up to 30 days.
And finally, China has summoned the U.S. ambassador after Washington charged five Chinese military officers with conducting economic espionage against American companies. The official Xinhua news agency says Assistant Foreign Minister Zheng Zhengguan told U.S. Ambassador Max Bucas that the charges seriously harmed U.S.-China relations. China has rejected the criminal allegations, the first ever leveled by the U.S. against a foreign power for cybercrimes targeting American businesses.
ZANU-PF's insistence on the full implementation of its controversial indigenization policy and its hardline stance against the West appear to be waning in favor of a more conciliatory call for re-engagement and compromise on black empowerment.
Zimbabwe's threats to kick out foreign-owned companies that don't toe the indigenization line have turned to assurances, for some, that no such thing will happen. President Robert Mugabe took many by surprise when he declared in his 2014 Independence Day speech that he would negotiate with companies bringing business to Zimbabwe and not impose on them the 51-49% stakeholder requirement. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa echoed the same assurances at a recent international conference in Harare, saying government would not take 51% of anyone's money, adding, "No one size fits all." At the same conference, Minister Chinamasa also called for an end to confrontation with the West, saying Zimbabwe is ready for new partnerships. Analysts are pondering the meaning of ZANU-PF's change of tone and position. Lecturer Tendai Chari of the University of Venda in South Africa says ZANU-PF is simply claiming its July election victory.
I wouldn't characterize it as change as such. Maybe as far as the indigenization policy and media policies and so forth, I would say perhaps it's a moderation of those policies, and we know that ZANU-PF won comprehensively on July 31st, 2013. And so perhaps ZANU-PF is feeling more comfortable in the driving seat in terms of consolidating its power base and so on.
With former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai now out of the unity government and his party fractured by internal conflict that has potentially turned off Western supporters, Nkululeko Sibanda of Huddersfield University in the United Kingdom says ZANU-PF is capitalizing on the vacuum of political opposition.
ZANU-PF certainly believes that with Morgan Tsvangirai losing his position, there's a vacuum in terms of who the international community can relate to, and that they hope they can recapture the position they had before the advent of the MDC.
But political analyst Brilliant Mtlanga of Hertfordshire University in the United Kingdom sees this more as a reaction by ZANU-PF to a dose of reality.
Over the years, they have been pursuing the East policy, you know, the Look East policy. But it is known that those that they are dealing with in the East, China and India and, of course, others, are also dealing with the West. So they know for a fact that they also cannot rule out the West in terms of business dealing. So it's a strategy.
Whatever the motivation, analysts say ZANU-PF has little choice but to do something different given the state of the economy and the hardships citizens are subjected to. The challenge, however, remains winning over Western countries who for many years had pushed for regime change in the country and showed open support for the MDC. Media studies lecturer Tendai Chari says the West is paying close attention.
There's a correlation between the media agenda and the foreign policy agenda. I cannot say that they've quite dropped the regime change agenda, but they are studying the situation. They might embrace ZANU-PF completely, depending on how things pan out in the opposition, because quite clearly the Western world is I cannot say fed up with the MDC, but they are disappointed with the developments in the MDC.
Nkululeko Sibanda contends the West, while cautious, has little option but to work with ZANU-PF and President Mugabe.
It is a fact. I know, speaking to a few governments in Europe, Western governments believe that they still need to have some form of partnership with Zimbabwe, and that therefore, since Mugabe is still in power, they may have to find a working position.
Echoing this, Brilliant Mklanga says, despite its apparent anti-ZANU-PF stance, the West has been engaging Harare and will likely do so more openly. He says the United States omission of Zimbabwe from the countries invited to meet with President Obama in August is inconsequential.
They are talking. We know that America is talking to Zimbabwe, and we know that Britain is talking to Zimbabwe. We know that other countries in the West are talking. Those are merely negotiating strategies in international relations. We should expect that to be happening. But don't be surprised that in the next next other big event, Zimbabwe might be invited. Mm-hmm. And we have seen Zimbabwean ministers coming to Washington, so that shouldn't surprise us.
Aside from winning over the international community, analysts say ZANU-PF is also waking up to the reality that citizens are disgruntled and want to see ZANU-PF bring change. Again, Tendai Chari of the University of Venda in South Africa.
They tend to benefit a lot by polishing their image, and I think they are trying their relations with the media. The Minister of Information, I think, is trying to reach out to the media in a big way, which perhaps signals the government's intention to mend its relations with the media and also to polish its image, which has been in bad shape for quite some time.
Somewhat in agreement, Brilliant Mhlanga adds, ZANU-PF made election promises that it knows it needs to deliver on.
The indigenization policy, while it is a very good policy, it requires care, because it really can upset a lot of things, for example, foreign direct investment, as already is happening. So ZANU knows all this, and they know that for them not to be punished by people in the next election, when people would end up saying, you made promises which you didn't fulfill, they really have to change. And they know where it's actually binding, and they're trying to address that issue which is binding.
Nkululeko Sibanda warns it is folly to believe the Liberation Party has changed its stripes.
ZANU-PF has never believed in convincing the voter using soft methods, which would be what Western democracies do. In the interim, ZANU-PF does need an economy that is improving, and that with the MDC out of government completely, that they're able to maintain some level of sanity and the supermarkets and so forth. So I see this as certainly having nothing to do with the people of Zimbabwe, and I see ZANU-PF changing its position if need be towards any election.
It remains to be seen whether ZANU-PF's re-engagement and toning down of rhetoric will bring the much-needed foreign investment and pacify the millions failing to make ends meet. Reporting for Studio 7 from Washington, this is Ndimyake Mwakalielie.
While the collapse of businesses in major towns and cities is a matter of public record, the impact of the dying economy in the countryside is rarely in focus. And now rural merchants are raising the alarm. Business owners who spoke with Studio 7 painted a bleak economic outlook, complaining of no sales on some days and high rates charged by local authorities. One such merchant, Nhlanhla Puti, who owns Kunatwa Kutengwa dealership in Plumtree's Mangubo area, says her business is facing certain collapse. Her fears and concerns were similarly echoed by several other business owners who spoke to Studio 7. Economic commentator Masimba Kuchera warns the economic stagnation means perpetual poverty for Zimbabwe's rural folk.
The economic outlook in the countryside is a bit dire, considering a number of factors, including prices, stagnant prices of cash crops like tobacco and cotton, and also sub-economic prices of crops like maize. I think that the economic outlook, therefore, in the rural areas, inspired by those depressed and stagnant prices, added to that very little liquidity within the market, makes it very difficult, especially for people in the countryside who rely on activity sometimes in the cities to be able to boost their own economies. What it means is that people in the countryside or people in the rural areas are going to have serious problems accessing goods and services, and it's going to be more expensive for them. So what it means is that they are going to have a more difficult life in the medium to short term. So we are going to have a deterioration in the standard of life of people in the rural areas in the short to medium term, unless drastic action is taken.
That was economy commentator Masimba Kuchera on the line from Harare with Studio 7 reporter Ntunga Milinkomo.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m.
Studio 7 Live Talk every day at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will discuss with experts and you, the listener, topical issues affecting the country. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. The number again, 001-202-465-0318.
And today the topic is ZANU-PF's re-engagement efforts with the West and related issues. Do you think ZANU-PF is climbing down? If you want to join us, yes, please text us on 001-202-465-0318. Ndimiak, it seems time is not on our side. Just a brief recap of our top stories.
Leading Zimbabwean refugee groups in South Africa dismiss recent press reports that Zimbabweans living in that country will not be allowed to renew their permits when they expire in November.
And ZANU-PF's hardline stance against the West